I wanna shoot, baby. Shoot.
Ooh. How you doing, baby?
Right here.
No. Not you. You. The bull.
Wow, is this us? This is
pretty
Dr.
good.
Lehman's favorite song right here. This is, you hear this in Norway or no?
Not too much. Not too much.
This takes me back to like the 1990s. Who is it? TLC?
I think it is.
Yeah, it might be TLC. What do you know, Matt? It's all Salt and Pepper. I should have known
close.
That.
That's
no,
close.
That's bad. That's
yeah,
bad.
That's
I should
right.
know that. Hey, hope you enjoyed Hockey Sense, brought to you by MTC Truck Driver Training. Again, some great trucking companies out there, including Hogan Trucking, that'll hire you, pay for your truck driver training at MTC Truck Driver Training. Then you have a job waiting for you. Also, Gateway Buick GMC, who brings us this hour, which is sports medicine, as we continue broadcasting live from the Slider House. Dr. Rick Lehman's back in the house. We had Dr. Staley filling in for you, did a great job last week. You were in Norway.
Yeah.
Like, when do you make these decisions? Like, all of a sudden, Dr. Lehman will be like, yeah, we won't be here next week. We're going to Norway. It's not like he's going to, like, Denver, maybe Kansas City, maybe even New York or Boston or L.A. You go to Norway. Nothing wrong with that, man. That looked unbelievable, but it looked a little hazy. Was the sun ever out?
Well, you know, Norway is a weird country in that they have 24 hours of sun in the summer, and then they have 24 hours of dark in the winter. So
really?
You'd wake up at 2, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, and you know, your schedule's all messed up anyway because of the time change. And it'd be like 3 in the morning, and it'd still be kind of light out.
Wow.
So that was kind of weird. And it was a little, especially up in the fjords, it was a little hazy. But the weather was unbelievable because it was about 45 at night, and it was probably about 60 during the day, except when you got on some of these long hikes and these high hikes, it was a little cooler, you know, as you kind of
climb the elevation. Yeah,
yeah. Got a little cooler.
Had you been there before?
I had been there before. It's been a long time.
Had your family been there?
No.
Did you took the whole family, right?
Yeah, my daughter wanted to go on this hike, this famous hike, and the hike was insane, 14 hours up this mountain, and at the end of it, you climb out on this ledge, which is this big ledge, and then, you know, everybody takes their picture doing stupid things on this ledge, and that's kind of the whole thing.
Like a scary ledge? Like you're overlooking, like, I mean, it's like the Grand Canyon or what?
Well, if you fell off the ledge, you'd probably...
You're done.
Yeah, 7,500 feet, you know, you wouldn't have a prayer. And, you know, people are sitting on the edge, and people are doing handstands on the edge.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, it's...
Oh, my God. Who is that?
That's your handsome ghost host here.
That's you?
Yeah.
Sitting on the ledge like that?
Sitting on the ledge, and a guy takes it from across the way.
Why would you do that?
Well, people do, this is nothing. I mean,
how many casualties have there been?
So there's usually about 10 a year. Here's a guy laying on the ledge. That's not me. You know, and people are doing these crazy things, but that's not the gist of the whole thing is this hike. Here's my son on the ledge.
See, it doesn't look that high from there, but you're really high, though.
Yeah, I mean, the water from this edge of the ledge to the water is 7,500 feet, so you wouldn't have a prayer.
You'd fall in the water, though, right?
You'd fall in the water, and you'd be instantly dead.
Oh.
But the key was the hike. The hike was this, you know, monstrous hike. Everybody had a great time.
Is it a hard hike?
It's a hard hike. Here's some guys taking selfies. Now, you can imagine, hey, you know, you're stepping back, and the next thing you know, you're in a drink, and, you know, then you're dead.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't do that. Now, but they're a little further away from the ledge. Like that's where I would be. Like, I would be, like, 20 feet away. I wouldn't even be that close.
And some people were...
They don't have a fence there or anything.
There's no fence, and some people were truly... If you look at my picture up close,
yeah,
my butt's up on the ledge.
I know, you're crazy, though.
I know, but there were people that had their legs literally just a little bit of the cheek, and the rest of it was over the edge.
Oh, my God. I'm getting sick even thinking about it.
Right.
So 14 hours, the whole hike, right?
Yeah.
Right?
No, well, and even not even that much because it took about six and a half to get up. And then you waited on a little line to get out on this ledge because everybody was clowning, you know, getting their picture taken. And then they had a photographer, blah, blah, blah. And then you had to climb down. Climbing down wasn't very easy because it was very, very steep. Actually, coming up was a lot easier than going down. But you know what? It's one of these things that people come from all over Europe to do this hike. People were from literally everywhere, Russia, Czechoslovakia, etc.
So it's like a busy hike, huh?
It's like,
did you have a guide or no?
No. And okay. If you go in the winter, you have to have a guide.
Yeah. I would imagine you're going up that high, there's got to be a lot of snow. So how long is the trip to get to Norway?
Well, we flew from here to New York, to Amsterdam, to Norway. So probably about, the big ticket is Kennedy to Amsterdam. It's probably about 7 hours, and it's about 2 more hours to get to Oslo.
Not, that's not terrible.
No, it's not like Australia or something.
No, no, no. Well, that's cool. So you knocked that off your bucket list, right?
Yeah.
Would you go back?
I go back in. I mean, it's a great country. The only negative I could see is in the winter, it's dark 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I've been to Alaska now when during dark season.
And what's that like?
It's like being in the dark 24 hours a day.
I mean, that's rough.
Yeah, and then other parts of the year in Alaska, it's like light the whole day.
Right, so the light part
why,
all day.
Why is it like that? I don't understand. Like, what causes that? You should know that, too.
Well,
like,
it's the positioning of the sun.
Okay.
Because you're so north. But the problem is, you know, if it's light during the day uh-huh. and you want to go to sleep and you get these special curtains, it seems like it's dark.
I see.
But if it's dark all the time and you're outside and it's 2 in the afternoon and you know you want to go play some golf and it's pitch black out, you know, that's not so good.
What's the scene like there? Great restaurants, bars, the whole nine yards?
So it's a very progressive country. I mean, they're kind of eons ahead of us. Internet in a park, internet in the city of Oslo.
Really?
Lightning fast. You go to the grocery store. You get your credit card gets scanned, and then you just put the stuff. There's no checkers. You put the stuff in your little box and walk out, and it just shows up on your credit card.
Wow, just like that. So it scans it in the box, basically.
Yeah, infrastructure is insane.
Wow.
You know, it's just a very, very progressive country. They're educated. Everybody speaks English. Half their classes are in English. So they speak Norwegian, but they speak English as good as you or me, probably better than me. I mean,
right.
Unbelievable.
Right. Wow, that's very cool you went there. And you said you will go back. So, okay, and you took the whole family. So that's a memory you'll have for a long, long time.
No, there's no – you know, my kids are a little older, so we're not going to have a whole lot of years where all the kids are going to say, hey,
did your wife do the hike?
Yeah.
Oh, did
yeah.
she?
Yeah. She's tough.
Yeah, she's tough. I like that. Good for you. This is Sports Medicine brought to you by Gateway Buick GMC. We're live at the Slaughterhouse at the corner of McKnight and Manchester. Natasha Kwan, I don't know if she's been to Norway or not. We'll ask her when she gets here. She's from Frida's in University City. And you hear Alexander Steen do the commercials on Hockey Sense and, of course, on this show as well. And looking forward to talking with Natasha from Frida's in University City. She joins us about once a month or so here on the show, and we're always looking forward to that. In the medical world, I mean, what, anything, nothing crazy happened? You didn't have to, like, help anybody on the plane or nobody passed out, like, on the sidewalk? And you know, they said, is there a doctor here? And you said, yeah, I'm here, whatever. Nothing like that? No crazy stories?
You know, the plane ride was pretty uneventful. It was late, but no big deal. They're always late. And nobody real sick on the plane. So there wasn't any crazy stuff on the plane. On the hike, there was a lot of people that were bailing. You know, you could see people were dehydrated, couldn't go any further, throwing up, blah, blah, blah. So there was a lot of that. And really not much for me to get into as a sports guy, but, all in all, I will tell you, you know, things are pretty calm. You know, we got some cardinal injuries, Piscotty, hamstring, some stuff going on, but you know, not an eventful week in terms of Korea injured his thumb, but not an eventful week too bad in terms of sports injuries.
All right. Before we get to that, you know, I was on a plane one time with my wife who was pregnant and, you know, she kind of mentioned she wasn't feeling that great. She went up to the front to use the restroom, and like minutes later, I hear over the loudspeaker, is there a doctor on board? And I go running up to the front of the plane. She's like passed out at the front of the plane. Like scariest thing of all time. Passed out at the front of the plane, and they would not let me stay there with my wife.
Why?
They just said, you got to go back to your seat.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, this is before all this, like, United stuff. They didn't, like, drag me back there or anything like that, right? Or, like, they didn't, like, taser me. Nothing crazy happened. But I could have created some issue, maybe, and maybe created some headline news out of this. But there was a doctor on board who helped her to her feet and gave her some water and whatever else they did, and she ended up being okay. But, like, pregnant women, they can get dehydrated very quickly, can't they?
Well, you know, I think one of the things on a plane, so the air's blowing in your face. And it's recirculated air, so there's not a lot of water in the air. You know, it's very dry air by design. And so the one thing, you know, if you're going to go fly a long flight, you got to drink a lot of water. You got to drink a lot of something, Gatorade water, whatever it is. So you have to rehydrate. You do get dehydrated on a plane. People that are pregnant also have hemostasis issues, so they get what's called orthostatic. They stand up and they get dizzy. And they do tend to have more of these problems during pregnancy just based on hormonal issues, so you got to be very careful. So if you're pregnant, you're going to get on a long flight, you better say to yourself, I'm going to drink 12 ounces of water every 2 hours. That's what you got to do. And it's important to try to make sure you stay hydrated. If you don't stay hydrated, A, you may get sick to your stomach. More likely, you're going to get dizzy.
Well, yeah, that was scary, scary stuff. You got to be careful when you're pregnant. Getting back to Stephen Piscotty, he's got the hamstring injury. I mean, these things, especially for baseball players, they tend to linger longer than maybe other sports. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I think baseball, first of all, baseball, 162 games, lots of travel, a lot of repetition. So I think baseball players tend to have hamstring injuries, and they're going to recreate the same stress night after night after night. So I think they tend to hold these guys out a little bit longer because I think the recurrence rate is higher, number one. I think it's weird that you see so many hamstring injuries in baseball. You should see it in track and field. You should see it in football. But I think baseball players tend to have a lot of hamstring injuries, and I tend to think that they stay out longer than maybe sometimes they need to stay out just so they don't get re-injured.
Mm-hmm.
Remember last year, 2 years ago, Matt Holliday got injured, came back one game, got re-injured. So these are the things you want to try to avoid. The thing that always worries me is here's a guy that, you know, was doing pretty well, kind of had a little bit of a slump, then had a hamstring injury. So then you wonder, you know, how well is he going to come back? How much can he contribute down?
Especially with the way Tommy Pham's playing and whatnot, you know?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, everybody's a little bit down on the Cardinals. They're 4.5 games back.
Yeah.
The division's whatever. And you know what? They may be right in the mix. I wouldn't count them out.
The Cubs are like 2 games back, but it feels like they're 5 games ahead. You know what I'm saying? Like they've won 6 straight, and you just know that they're having their charge now, and they're not going to look back. You just have a feeling. You know what are we going to be saying a week from today? It's going to be like the Cubs are going to be in first place. Milwaukee's going to slide down to second, and you're not going to catch Chicago. Almost the way we predicted it to be all season long, and maybe have taken them a little longer to kind of get their A game together, but it seems like now they're catching their stride as we head into August, and it's going to be tough to catch the Chicago Cubs, I think, like a lot of us expected coming into the season.
I agree with that, but, you know, I think one of the biggest things is they've got 2 or 3 guys off the DL that are not, you know, their injury situation is getting better.
And they're adding players. You know?
And they're doing the thing that the Cardinals rarely do, and they're adding players. You know, everyone says, well, go get Carlos Stanton and get let's try to bulk up the team and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the Cubs are always up for adding that key player. And you know, quite honestly, the Cardinals haven't done it this year, and that's just not their history.
Walt Jocketty was so good at doing that.
He was great,
no doubt. If it was Woody Williams, Larry Walker, Will Clark.
Always.
Even Matt Holliday, obviously they signed him to a long-term contract extension. I mean, he could always find not only the right arm or the right bat, but the right personality to fit in with the team, you know? I mean, rarely did he make a big blockbuster move or a big move and it didn't work. Even in the case of Will Clark, you didn't know how much he had left. Larry Walker, you didn't know where he was at in terms of his game. I mean, these guys were obviously towards the end of their careers, but he still was able to identify the right player. I mean, that's one skill that really has been lacking and missing from this organization, even though I'm a big Mo fan. But some guys are just really good at that. But and in the case of Jocketty, he didn't necessarily carry that over to Cincinnati, though. So,
yeah, and I totally agree with that. You know, he didn't pay a lot for these guys. He'd get a half a season and a half out of them. And they were perfect fits, like you said, and they filled spots. And a lot of them were instrumental in runs that the Cardinals had. And we haven't had that. In Chicago, Theo Epstein's very good at that. You know, he finds that guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, A, you got to be ready to spend some money. And B, you have to have a knack for being able to fill a spot in a guy, like you said, who's going to gel with the team. And when you don't have that and other teams are more aggressive, you know, that hurts you. Now, you're talking about a division that I think we can all agree on is somewhat weak. Now, if the Cubs win the rest of their, you know, next 80 games, which they won't, you know, it can be a little bit different. But you look at teams like L.A. and Arizona and some of these other Washington, you know, there's no real team like that in the division right now. So the Cardinals still are hanging in. Now, you're right. If Chicago takes off, like, a bat out of hell and they just kick it, yeah, everyone's going to look back and say, well, this is what was supposed to happen.
You know, you mentioned Piscotty and the hamstring injury, and, you know, I always thought that if you play in warm weather, warm temperatures, that the chances or the percentages of having a soft tissue injury like that are significantly reduced compared to playing in cold weather, like a football player, for example, or when a baseball player is playing at the beginning or the end of the year where maybe the temperatures drop, and maybe the chances of dealing with a hamstring injury or a groin or something like that would increase. I'm surprised as many guys get those in the middle of the summer when they're as active as they are and their muscles are conditioned to be playing every single day.
I agree with that. And, you know, I think part of it has to be with a hamstring quad core imbalance that, you know, maybe hasn't really been addressed, or a weird situation. This wasn't a weird situation. He was just running to first base, but sometimes, you know, you hit the base wrong, or you slide wrong, or you trip going for a fly ball or something. But this wasn't that, and I agree with you. I think in warm weather situations, you would not expect as many soft tissue injuries, and that's hamstring, quad injuries, you know, rib cage injuries, etc. The problem is they're nagging injuries, number one. And again, like I said a minute ago, there's a lot of recurrence. So you hurt your hamstring, you go through the rehab, you feel good, come back, and 2 weeks later, the next thing you know, your hamstring's sore again. So some injuries resolve, and you know you're never going to see him again.
Yeah. All right. That's Dr. Rick Lehman from the U.S. Center for Sports Medicine. I'm Andy Strickland. We're live at the Slider House. This is Sports Medicine, brought to you by Gateway Buick GMC. The Slider House is located right here at the corner of McKnight and Manchester. They've got a great patio, recently named the top patio in St. Louis. Over 80 canned craft beers, so if you're into the craft beer, this is your spot to be for sure. And again, we love being here at the Slider House. You know, concussions and athletes, this has been something we've talked about at length for a long, long time here on this show, and obviously we see it being talked about everywhere. But now there's something that maybe they can detect, long-term concussion in athletes. There's a new method that's out there. Explain this one to us, Doc.
Well, so, you know, the knock on concussions has always been, it's sort of been a clinical diagnosis. And so we've never really been able to, unlike an x-ray, let's say, that can tell you this, the bone's broken, the bone's healed. So it's been hard to follow concussions, number one, and it's been hard to diagnose concussions, number two. So basically what is coming out is research at University of Montreal, and this research is telling us that they may have a tool that identifies a protein that will tell you, one, if you've had a concussion, and two, how your concussion has progressed or not progressed. And so what they think will happen is, you know, you played 5 years in a National Football League, and in 10 years you start to have symptoms of whatever, and they will be able to go back, study your brain tissue, look at this protein, and tell, hey, yeah, Andy, you did have a concussion. This is the severity of the concussion, and this is kind of what's going on. So with testing and being able to determine if you've had a concussion, they feel like a lot of the NFL football players that said, look, I had a concussion when I played, or I had a problem, are going to be able to be, A, compensated, and, B, are going to be able to be followed in terms of the severity with this test, looking at these proteins and how the body has responded.
And how can they prove that the trauma is caused by a concussion?
Well, that's the rub. You just hit the big rub. And so the lawyers on the other side are going to say, okay, you played, you know, 5 years NFL football. How do we know you didn't fall off your motorcycle? How do we know you didn't get drunk in a bar and land on your head? You know, maybe you got this concussion in high school. So that's going to be the rub, and that's going to be the determining factor. Now, what's going to happen is there's going to be a baseline. So you're going to join the NFL. They're going to get a baseline study, look at this protein, and they're going to try to determine what your baseline is and then follow you out to see if something has happened intervening besides, you know, the damage you had playing football. Now, you don't need to have a concussion playing NFL football to have brain trauma. And that's been shown over and over again. Just hitting a tackling dummy, going through practice is enough. Getting tackled is enough to have brain trauma. And the other problem is the data is only probably about 90% accurate. So everyone on the other side is going to say, well, this is a 10%, you know, that didn't really have it. So I think there are still some issues. But at least we're getting to a place where we're starting to be able to follow or at least understand what the brain does after it has a concussion. And sooner or later, we will have a test as simple as an x-ray to say, you had it, now it's cured, you
really?
Know, rock and roll, you
but
can
the,
play.
The concussion is cured. It's cured.
It's cured.
Through an x-ray.
Well, some test. It'll be like an MRI or
right.
protein
some
scan.
Some type of scan, yeah.
But, you know, now, like in the NHL, guy, you know, did he have a concussion? Does he need to go through the protocol? When can he come back? Sidney Crosby, you know, when should he come back? Is it healed? No, you know, no. It's all guesswork for the doctor.
Right.
I mean, I go through it virtually every day, and it's all clinical. But it'd be nice to have a test to say, okay, that brain is healed. You're out of danger. Rock and roll. Go play hockey.
You know, we heard about this NFL lawsuit by former players against the National Football League in regard to concussion. That was the argument by lawyers on the other side, is that there was no proof to prove that the concussions were caused by playing in the National Football League, right?
Right.
But, you know, I watched this whole documentary recently of Mike Tyson. And, you know, it showed a lot of the boxers that he fought over the course of his time as a professional fighter. And they'd have these press conferences and these interviews and stuff leading up to the fight. And so many of these fighters back then, remember how these fighters couldn't even talk before the fights? Like they couldn't talk. I mean, like, they had so much, you know, it looked like it was brain damage. And you just kind of looked at it like, oh, yeah, these guys who fight, you know, they get punched in the head so many times they just can't talk. You act like it's nothing. Yet they continue to put themselves out there in the ring. And it seems like today's fighter, today's boxer, you know, like you see these press conferences right now with Mayweather, who's never lost, probably hasn't been punched in the head that much, to be honest with you, because he's been so successful. These guys seem to be able to speak a little more clear than maybe fighters did back in the 80s and the 90s and before that.
Well, you know, I think a couple things have happened. There's no question that if you're a boxer and you repetitively get punched in the head or in the face, and you know, you're sparring, you get punched, you're in the ring fighting, you get punched, the more times you get punched, the worse your brain trauma is going to be. That's a fact. And I think boxers have come understand that. So now, as opposed to going and sparring for three or four rounds and letting somebody just bang the stink out of your head, they wear protective gear. They're told not to hit each other in the head.
When they spar.
So that's brought down a lot of brain trauma, number one. And number two, I think they're very selective about their sparring. They're not just sparring, you know, forever and just going crazy. I think what they're doing is they're realizing that this trauma is very, very detrimental, and they're very cognizant of how much they should spar, how much they should get hit, and they're also much bigger distances between fights. So there is a lot of information that has caused these guys to not get the head trauma they used to have. And I think the incidence, you know, of whatever, Parkinson's-induced head trauma, which is what Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali had, and, you know, Joe Louis at the end could barely talk. When you see some of these guys 4 or 5 years after they retired, you're talking about people literally that could not carry on a conversation.
I remember with it wasn't Corey Spinks, but his dad. Remember his dad?
Yeah, Leon.
Leon. I mean, when he came back to, you know, he did some press stuff, but you really couldn't talk to him.
No.
You know, I mean, he had, you know, severe, you know, trauma, whatever. I'm not a doctor. I don't know the specific type of trauma that he had, but obviously it was related to his time in the ring. And you almost felt really bad for him, you know? I mean, and people talk about that all the time now. They say, you know, the best athletes we have in the country are now playing football and basketball and baseball and hockey, these other sports. They're no longer fighting. And how fighting has dipped as a boxer, you know, the best athletes are no longer boxing. You know, they're now tight ends or defensive ends or linebackers or whatever. Well, why would you want people say they don't want their kid playing football. Why would you want him to be a boxer, you know? That seems like the dumbest idea. That for a living, I mean, what's the percentage of boxers that truly make money? You know, I mean, I'm talking like the multi-million dollars that these guys get in these prize fights. I mean, it's probably less than 2%.
Oh, it's not even that. I mean, it's first of all, most people that fight, you know, they'll fight 8-10 fights and that's it. They don't make any money. They don't get anywhere. They can't win. Then you get a few guys that work their way up through the ranks. And, you know, maybe they get a prize money of $1 million or $800,000, $600,000. That's a lot.
Those are championship fights, though.
Huh?
Those are probably championship fights.
Those are big fights. So when you hear of Floyd Mayweather getting $100 million, that's one in a million.
126.
You know, that's the best hockey player. That's the greatest of whatever.
Yes. But he's doing that for about 45 minutes of work.
No.
Although he's on the press tour right now, which is turned into like the WWF. I mean, it's like so scripted, it's not even entertaining. But, yeah, so that's, I mean, hey, I'd let you punch me in the head as much as you want for $126 million.
But, you know, if you look at it, most fighters are foreign. The majority of fighters are foreign
now
today.
Now they are, yeah.
You know, so you don't see as many American kids going into it. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, it's a death sentence. I mean, like you said, would you really want your son or, you know, your daughter, in a few cases that some of the women are fighting, to go through the training? You know, the idea is to get punched in the head to get brain disease. I mean, that's the whole idea of being a boxer.
Yeah. It's just like wrestling to get cauliflower ear, you know? Like, it's a badge of honor if you can get that cauliflower ear. All right, before we take a break and bring in Natasha Kwan, our good friend from Frieda's in University City, What's this about humans ever regenerating a heart? A new study maybe suggests that you can regenerate a new heart? Explain this one to us.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, everybody remembers when the genetics and the DNA were reproduced and someone made a goat, and that was a great thing, and then a sheep, and that was a great thing. So, you know, there's no question that we're going to be able to clone animals. We're going to be able to make animals. We're going to be able to, and there is a deal now where you can make your pet for $100,000. So if you want to clone your pet,
get out of here.
Yeah,
for $100,000.
For 100 grand, if you got, you know, Fido, you love this dog or cat so much and you want to go get the thing cloned for 100 beans, you can go, and I think it's in London, but I'm not 100% sure, and they will clone this animal
for
you.
The exact same dog.
Exact same dog, same everything. So
Frida, by the way, is a cat. So maybe we can clone Frida. Frida's still alive, right? Yeah, Frida's still alive. We'll clone the cat.
So if you had like Lassie or Rin Tin Tin or Frida and you wanted to make sure that, you know, you were ready to rock, you pay the money, you get the. So if you can clone an animal,
yeah,
just think what you could do if you could take the same DNA, use that to heal a congenital defect in your heart, to recreate the muscle in your heart. And these guys, I mean, it's fascinating what's going to happen. So this is the University of Florida. This isn't some fly-by-night place. And they're able to take the DNA, reproduce organs, parts of the heart, and regenerate defects in the heart. And it's not going to be all that long. Instead of having a heart transplant, what they're going to do is they're going to take Andy's DNA, grow Andy's heart, and then put it in instead of the diseased heart that you have. So transplants, kidney transplants, heart transplants, lung transplants will be a thing of the future. That were a thing of the future are going to be a thing of the past, and the thing of the future is going to be just cloning your organs. Just like I said, you know, if you want to pay the money, you can clone your animals.
Well, that's pretty amazing stuff right there.
The guys are geniuses. I mean,
you know, my dog passed away, and she was unbelievable. Like, what? Maybe
not $100,000.
No, to create a new. I mean, it probably wouldn't have been as good as my other dog anyway. I mean, like, she was a perfect dog. But for some people, maybe that crazy. You know, if you have 100 hours to kick around, maybe they do it. You know,
someone's doing it because they wouldn't be in business.
And where are they? Where are they doing this?
You know, it's in.
In Norway?
It's in. They probably could do it. They're so smart. But they're doing it somewhere, you know. And
it's not happening here, put it that way.
Well, I don't think politically we're going to have that happening here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see how that goes. People have tried to clone what they do over at Gateway Buick GMC, Doc. You know that. But there's only one Gateway Buick GMC at the corner of I-270 and McDonald Boulevard, where Gateway is truly the right way. And nobody can duplicate what they're doing, correct?
I don't think so. And it's true. I got a new truck this week.
A new one?
Yeah. And the thing is absolutely insane.
What'd you get?
Well, I got just a big Denali truck. And
the pickup or no?
Yeah, it's a pickup. And basically, it has every possible option, and it's just the coolest thing in the world. I mean, it's so comfortable. It's just one of these trucks that you just drive in and you say, I just love this truck. And I'm not a truck guy, really, but
people love the – listen, the pickup truck is not what it used to be. You know, people love the pickup truck nowadays. These things drive like cars. Even more comfortable than a car. I mean, they are so comfortable. And, again, you mentioned all the bells and whistles. They have all of that. And, you know, they have the Buicks there, too. We can't, you know, forget about the Buicks they have with the Enclave and some of these other Buicks. The Buick is a beautiful, beautiful vehicle right now as well.
Absolutely. And there's a convertible that's unbelievable. And, you know, the Buicks are so comfortable. And, you know, they're like Cadillacs. They really are. So these cars, these American cars have stepped up beyond, you know, what I would say are luxury automobiles. You know, you used to think of BMW, Mercedes, and they're good cars. But I defy you to go get into one of these high-end Buicks and tell me that your Mercedes is that much nicer, because it isn't.
No, I'm with you there. And they do a great job with their social media, by the way. Shout out to the social media department, Instagram. I mean, they showcase everybody who buys a car there gets put on their Instagram account.
I know. So you want to buy a car just to get on Instagram.
Yeah, they throw you on there. But Gateway is truly the right way. They're having the sale of the summer. We keep talking about the sale of the summer. So see your neighborhood dealership located, like I said, at I-270 and McDonald Boulevard in Hazelwood for select vehicles with over $10,000 off MSRP, Doc. Over $10,000. You got to act fast. These Buick and GMC select price units move very, very quickly. Shop online, www.stlouisbuickgmc.com, or call 888-865-9419. Again, stlouisbuickgmc.com, 888-865-9419 to book a free test drive. It costs nothing for a test drive. And they've got the service bays, and again, they treat you like you own the place. They truly do. At Gateway Buick GMC at the corner of I-270 and McDonald Boulevard. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're live at the Slider House here at the corner of Manchester and McKnight. We'll talk things over with Natasha Kwan from Frida's in University City. She also owns Pedal Pedal. We got a lot of stuff to get into with Natasha as she joins us on a regular basis here on Sports Medicine on 590 The Fan KFNS. Dr. Lehman's in the house. Matt's here. I'm Andy Strickland. We're here till 8 o'clock.